Welcome to the June edition of BBRO Bcast. I'm Francesca Broom, your host and Knowledge Exchange Manager for BBRO. So May has been a challenging month, though despite the dry weather, the sugar beet crop has been holding its own in most areas. And if you're following the BBRO aphid watch, you'll know that through careful monitoring and good practice, the current risk of virus yellows is being managed. However, vigilance is still required, so keep on checking your crops for aphids, and while you're out there, check the heart leaves for signs of the beet moth too. Now, all of the BBR team are busy, particularly when it comes to aphid inoculations, and May again is the busiest month for that. But one person in particular has taken on quite a lot of work for this year, and that's Dr. Georgina Barrett, who is actually looking after our crop production side. And she's got projects ranging from drought, nitrogen optimisation, fertiliser placement, carbon emissions, strip till, cover crops. You name it, George seems to be involved. And that's one of the challenges of sugar beet, and certainly in BBRO, that it's not all about pests and diseases. It's about building resilience and having a holistic overview of all that affects the crop. And whilst that's easy to say, when you've been faced with the dry weather we've had, I know that rainfall has been on the minds of most of you. And of course, we have now had some. As you'd expect, the rain coincided with the bank holiday, but it didn't dampen the spirits of the BBRO team, who were out in field inoculating the Goliath virus yellows trial. Which may not sound the most exciting of jobs, but when it's the culmination of months of hard work for our amazing lab and horticultural team, it was quite a feat to see it actually come to fruition. And we had another reason to celebrate, as we were joined by our new Managing Director, Stephen Swainston. I briefly caught up with Stephen on day three of his new role. Welcome to BBRO, Stephen.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so the pressure is now gone, because poor Stephen, he's actually, his first sort of really interaction with the BBRO team was out in field, wasn't it?
Well, you may as well get stuck in and get your hands dirty, and it's a great place to learn and to meet everybody. So it was a good opportunity to meet the whole BBRO team, but also the kind people that came along to help us on the day.
Yeah, no, we had a great day as well. And believe it or not, you can have fun when you're inoculating plants with lots of aphids.
Lots and lots of aphids. A very good amount of aphids this year in comparison to previous years. The only challenge was, as we'd all expect, the weather never plays by the rules, and it got a bit wet in places.
We certainly did. But I am sure all of you growers out there are very pleased with the fact that we had a little bit of rain, and long may it continue. We just need a bit more, don't we? But hopefully that might be over the evenings rather than during the day, and we could all get on. But Stephen, so you've come to us, BBRO, with a bit of a background in salads, haven't you?
Well, I have a very varied background. I'm not afraid of trying new things, and BBRO is definitely a new thing for me. I have spent the majority of my working life on the commercial side, dealing with supermarkets and growers, buying products from around the world. Working a diverse set of products. I've worked with salads, I've worked with veg, I've grown products in Spalding and Spain to be able to supply to UK supermarkets, but I've also worked in flowers and plants. So a diverse element, but always horticultural floriculture.
Yeah, and not always in the UK, because you spent some time in the Netherlands.
Yes, I lived in Holland just over 12 years. I met my wife at university and ended up living in Holland. So I managed to learn how to speak Dutch in that time, so I can fluently converse with my mother-in-law was the key objective. That box has been ticked.
I was there. I imagine that was gaining a few brownie points.
It definitely did, yes. It's helped an awful lot with I have two young children. I have two daughters, 18 and 15, and it helps that they can also speak Dutch. So, yes, we have little private conversations ourselves.
Yeah. Now, far too early to ask you what you think of BBRO, so can you just tell me a little bit about why you've chosen to come to sugar beet?
Well, I thought it was a fantastic and interesting opportunity to help expand upon the sustainability and the growth and yield that growers can achieve with product. Having been involved in growing things myself and having talked to lots of growers over the years, it is a challenging area, and there's a lot of work still to be done in terms of unlocking those opportunities. And being at the forefront of things with BBRO felt like a fantastic opportunity to do something new and different.
And it's a really exciting industry to be involved in. I mean, our science team have got many interesting projects on the go, particularly the work being undertaken by George at the moment on the crop production side.
Well, there's a lot to learn, and it's a very well established team and a high level of skill and dedication to what they do. So I'm looking forward to learning an awful lot over the next few weeks and months. So if anyone has lots of questions for me, please bear in mind that I've got a lot to learn myself yet, but I will get there, and it shouldn't take me very long.
And we'll look forward to having you on a podcast in future.
Well, podcasts are always fun, yes, but always better when someone else is doing them, yes.
Lovely. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
It's amazing how many of my colleagues run when they see me with a microphone in hand. But if they're going to continue to deliver some interesting, valid applied farm research, then you need to know about it. Which is why I sneaked into the back of one of Georgina Barrett's presentations for a quick overview of her work.
We do a lot of crop production work. We sort of count that as anything that isn't a weed, pest or disease. But by no means does that mean we don't work closely together, because crop production decisions have a huge effect on crop protection as well.
George, sorry for me interrupting you, but when you say crop production, what areas are you actually covering?
See, we look more on the nutritional and soil health benefits. Fertiliser, soil health, tillage, some bits of harvest, drilling, varieties technically falls into crop production. It's quite broad, cover crops as well, which again has a massive overlap with crop protection. Done a lot of work producing a cover crop guide. So within that guide, we have all the sort of different scorings, general stuff, you know, how much biomass does it put on? What time of year do you want to sow it? Costings, seed rates, all that sort of one-stop shop, really. But the real novel part of it is we've tested those cover crop species for the different viruses. So if they host the different viruses, and also how tasty they are for aphids, sort of just in a kind of crude way of how many aphids have ended up on the plants. And we've had really good feedback on that for growers, because it's this ability to just open a sheet or a PDF and go, right, I'm thinking of using these. Is that the right thing to do? And that's something we're sort of expanding on this year. When the next set of virus cultures vacate the glasshouse, we go in with some more cover crop species and test it like that. So that's quite a big piece of work we've done, and something that's been very well received by the industry. On top of that, trying to do some knowledge exchange sort of demonstrations. So not quite hard science, but also not just a look-see, sort of in between. So we've had two trial sites that were drilled after cereal harvest last year, that are quite local to us, with four different treatments in, looking at different cover crop mixes, basically. So we've had strips left that are just bare stubble, a black oat and vetch mix, a radish and rye mix, and all singing, all dancing, going to solve all your problems vitality mix that has five different species in it. So part of the reason we've looked at that is just trying to pull out the fact you don't need to make cover crops that complicated. A lot of the evidence shows two to three species is adequate. So we've been doing this with farmers, which is really rewarding. So we just supplied the seed to them, said, can you drill it this way? They've drilled it out, which obviously really helps for sort of having buy-in as well for growers to do it themselves. Even silly things like handling the seed, what went through the drill better, what didn't go through the drill so well.
George, I know you're working quite closely with a couple of growers on this. You've been out doing yield digs, etc., and biomass scores. But what sort of method are they using to destroy the crop? And is there enough information out there for growers to make a clear decision?
Great question. So both of these farmers, just glyphosate off, just spray off. Normally, due to just it being that time of year where it's a bit wetter, you don't really want to be travelling and doing much else. And it's just so effective and it destroys the green bridge. We're doing a big UK-wide literature review on cover crops, like an industry-wide agriculture panel looking at understanding destruction and nutrient release. They're doing surveys and all sorts as well. That's going to be really interesting and obviously fit in with endophyte and grasses and seed popularities of things as well. And it just becomes, as you know, imminently complicated when you start looking at, you've got these species, this timing of destruction, method of destruction, you start putting sheep grazing in there and that compound, you know, grazing rates, how much you graze down to. And it's nice to talk to growers about, because you sort of get a hint from, we're doing this, well, that suggests it works. That'd be a great when that's published. Another big part of what we do is drought work. So in the UK, in the driest years, we have about a 25% yield loss due to drought. It's obviously a hard figure to come to, but that's the figure that researchers over many years have decided upon. But obviously that also varies from none. We don't have any drought some years. So it's hugely difficult for breeders to be producing a variety that yields well under optimal conditions, but can do well under drought. So what we've been doing is, as you can see, in very large, they're fruit polytunnels, actually, Spanish-style polytunnels. We grow different sugar beet varieties, irrigated and not irrigated, basically. And we also have the same thing mirrored outside, because it's really interesting to have, well, what would the crop have just done in the absence of me messing around with irrigation, which is a knowledge sort of, again, exercise. It's really interesting. So at the moment, we look at some of the recommended lists. We can fit 8 varieties in. Obviously, we're limited with polytunnel size. So we take the most popular recommended list varieties, some of the newer ones with interesting traits that might just by chance be bringing other genetics in, but also the breeders enter some varieties as well. And again, this links back to cover crop work, maintaining soil moisture, thinking about tillage as well, not just relying on variety. There's a whole holistic approach to making sure we're conserving that moisture in our seed bed, which I think this year might be very evident for some farmers with how dry it is. This is really interesting. So nitrogen product is a big part of what we do currently because of commercial pressures. There's 38% of emissions from sugar beet on farm come from fuel and fertiliser. Fuel we can do a bit about, but generally speaking, people are going to be doing heavy tillage because they need to be doing it. Or having X amount of passes because they need to. So fertiliser is the big one. If we can do something about fertiliser, that will really help our carbon footprint. What is difficult is sugar beet in the UK, we put about 120 kilos of bagged N on. So it's not a huge amount compared to your cereal crops that are going to be probably double that. So it's already a difficult sell on growers because that's their benchmark. I know it shouldn't be, but obviously they're like, well, beet's half what I normally put on my wheat crop. So why do I need to reduce it further? Optimising is our phrase. Yeah. So not reducing, optimising. Yeah. Two aspects to it. One is this product thing. So this came about because in the UK, we've got a lot of companies, buyers, or encouraging the use of CCM and high organic matter-based fertilisers. So they're the ones that are basically made. They're quite cool because they can be a circular economy. The pellets themselves can be made from food waste or manufacturing like waste from food production, and then they're enriched with a certain amount of nitrogen. So I kind of call them like a bagged manure. Obviously, they don't bring all the other benefits, but they've got that. They should increase soil organic matter. Yeah. The problem is they're like 8 to 10% N. So you're putting like 600 kilos on a hectare in an application. So actual management on farm. And it's really expensive. In the future, we might be pushed down this road, so we need to look at it now. So we've been doing trials. One of the things they're sold on is this slow release, which is what we don't want. We want all of our nitrogen early, canopy closure mid-June, leaf air index of 3, and then mineralisation of in the soil should keep the beet ticking over. So in summary, we're doing some plot trial work, looking at the different organic matter-based fertilisers against normal ammonium nitrate. And I'm also really enjoying having a zero fertiliser control, because that's giving a really good measure of just how fertile some of the soils are that we're on. Placement is not a standard practice in UK sugar beet. There are a lot of people doing it, but if you said the average grower probably isn't using fertiliser placement. However, we do know it is beneficial. The data sets are there, but we're still having issues with uptake. It doesn't help that there's a few bad stories of people getting it wrong and scorching crops off, and it's made people incredibly cautious. So we're doing a lot of on-farm trials. We've got 3 sites this year. One's very scientific, looking at literally pushing the rate right down. But the other ones are looking at using DAP. A lot of beet drills in the UK are maize drills primarily, and they happen to do a bit of beet. And they often use DAP for their maize. So we're seeing, does that have a benefit in beet? And then we've got a really switched on grower and agronomist who are very interested. They use a potato product which they swear by that has some additional nutrients in it. The other one is tillage trials. We work up at Holcombe at the moment. We only have this on one site because it is a logistical nightmare, and Holcombe are very, very good to work with, i.e. they turn up with 5 tractors, 5 different bits of tillage equipment, and they do it all in one day. So the one behind this is really looking at how much can we reduce tillage in sugar beet. really difficult area to work in because obviously it's so dependent on soil type. Holcombe is very easy to farm. It's very light soil type, so it suits strip till, it suits minimal tillage, and we're very much seeing that. We've had a treatment for 3 years now where we've literally just tickled the soil surface with some discs to about 5 centimetres, and it's done just as well as they're more intensive. Obviously, if we'd gone somewhere slightly heavier or more challenging, different story, but trying to find a grower that wants to do that on their more challenging soil type is very difficult, and probably high up there on our agenda trying to find someone else to work with. Oh yeah, another thing we're doing, so we work very closely with NIAB on lots of different things, but they have a really interesting long-term project, NIAB STARS, which is looking basically at rotational tillage practices and rotation, and every few years one of those treatments goes into beet. So, I mean, it's great for us because they do so much work and we get to hop in on the beet part of it. Ambitions to do more on-farm trials I've just touched on. So we really want to develop a strip trials harvester technology. It will be very much ours, but the farmers can go and do a trial guided by us, and then we can come in and rather than doing a lot of hand digs that are still very variable, actually having a trials harvester that will give us a more accurate... Basically, it will almost lift like a plot, do us a weight, and then sub-sample it will go to factory for sugars and impurities.
And it's on talks of trials harvesters that we had better leave George before she starts creating a wish list and even more projects to undertake. So I hope you've enjoyed this month's podcast and that this nice weather continues and we all have a successful start to the cereal harvest. And if you want to catch up with BBRO staff, look out for us at the NFU Sugar Hour at Cereals or at the Raw Norfolk Show at the end of the month. Thank you very much for listening.